In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello there and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News Podcast. Barry Murphy with you here from our news team. I'm joined on the line today by our news editor Katrina Morrissey, deputy news editor Amy Ford, our beef editor Adam Woods and news correspondents Noel Barden and Rachel Donovan. We've lots on the agenda again this week from across the farm sector. The March trade for cattle has been on fire across the country in recent days and Adam will tell us more. We'll also discuss some of the requirements for the new suckler scheme, a salmonella outbreak on poultry farms, women in agriculture, dog attacks on sheep, bush burning and the latest unease at the Irish Country Women's Association. A lot there to get through over the next 20 minutes or so. So look, Adam, first up over to you. You report on page one that the March trade for cattle is sizzling with record prices seen for cull cows from in March across the last week and all cattle types doing well. I pulled out a quote there, Adam, from Donegal Mart manager Emer McGuinness, who said she's never seen anything like it and that the trade is electric. How good is it, I suppose?
Yeah, Barry, look, we've got a perfect storm there at the moment in terms of it's not one cohort of animal buyers that's actually driving the trade. We've got feedlot finishers, we've got factory agents, we've got exporters, we've got farmer finishers, we've got people buying for grass. So that's all a combination coming in, we'll say, really driving the trade. And we've seen this week that actually the mart trade has actually taken over the factory trade. So because factory agents are around mart rings around the country, they're bidding those animals up. And really, it's the equivalent of €6 a kilo now is almost been given in mart. That's 120 or 150 euros per animal ahead of the equivalent that has been given in terms of factory layerages. We've also seen that export trade. We've seen a number of new exporters enter the market over the last number of weeks and paying up to €4 a kilo for 300 to 400 kilo bull weanlings for export over the last 2 weeks. So it's all really, really positive. Look at Barry, it's needed. Meal prices up, fertilizer prices up, energy is up. But it's a real vote of confidence for that sector because especially in Donegal, I was in Donegal last Friday, and just the buzz around that ring and, you know, so small suckler farmers down in South Donegal who have nothing else only suckling, you know, there's a bit of a buzz back there again. They're buying replacement heifers. It's really positive to see that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Particularly, I think, on the cull cow side of things, you know, I think there was a few farmers there with kind of the potential for this suckler reduction scheme coming that's been, I suppose, taken off the table now by Minister McConlogue, but they were maybe holding back a few cull cows there in the back end of last year to await news on that. But they seem to be selling them now and they're doing well.
Yeah, we've seen huge number of cows. We've seen 730 cows move through Gortaleigh last week. We've seen 400 moving through Kilkenny. So big, big numbers there. I think some suckler farmers are possibly looking at the prices and saying, look, this is big money here for cull cows. If a cow is empty or a cow is scanned empty or there's something wrong with a cow, let's offload her. You know, a cow coming into 2,500, you'd have a replacement heifer brought back in there, possibly 2.5 or possibly even 3. So it's a really good time in terms of maybe changing up that herd or changing some of those cull cows out, and they're just capitalising on the price. And yeah, like upwards of €3 a kilo being paid for cows in March this week. That's on the back of a very strong manufacturing beef trade. And we've seen huge numbers obviously killed over the last 2 weeks.
You know, you'd like to see it continue, and you have more, and your livestock team have more on pages 54 to 58 on the MART pages of the paper this week. So lots of reading in that for lads interested in selling stock. Just before you go, Adam, sticking with sucklers, you've more on page 3. and you're reporting the latest requirements for the new Suckler Carbon Efficiency Programme. Participating suckler farmers are going to have to be bored via quality assured, Adam, I gather. What do they need to know?
Yeah, so the massive amount of frustration out there. We were in Mullingar on Tuesday night in the last of our series of CAP meetings, and the department confirmed that night that there won't be changes to that scheme. So as a requirement of the new Suckler Carbon Efficiency Programme, farmers must be a member of the Board BEA Quality Assurance Scheme. It was before this, you had to be before you entered into that the SCEP scheme that you needed to be Board BEA Quality Assured. They're giving a bit of a kick out on that, and that you've got a couple of months now, maybe past the application date. They reckon they're going to open up applications on the 20th of March. The IFA called last week for changes to that scheme, but David Buckley, from head of beef schemes at the Department of Agriculture, said that look at this, this has gone to Brussels for approval in 2022. Terms and conditions have been wrote, and as I said, applications open on the 20th of March, so the chances of getting any changes to that is very, very slim. And what we're saying to farmers, because there's going to be thousands of farmers are going to look to get quality assured now in the next couple of months, really you need to get that plan in place as regards queuing yourself up to get approved. It takes a couple of weeks between sort of applying for quality assurance, getting an auditor out and getting approved. So really, really important that that's put in place. There is a massive amount of frustration out there, but at the moment, as David Buckley said, that's set in stone, that the QA requirement is there. So farmers just will have to deal with that.
Yeah, and as I said, more information there on page 3 for listeners. And just sticking with the quality assurance and Board BEA for a moment, Noel, bring yourself in there. And you report on page 8, look, you have an update on our page 1 story from last week on the Board BEA audit changes. And this is one that caused a lot of uproar with farmers. And Board BEA have come out and said they're going to consult farm groups. The changes are still happening though, I gather, Noel.
Yeah, it seems so, Barry. There will be a consultation phase over the plan changes. And I suppose the biggest of these changes that we can see so far is that there's a big indication that there's going to be some kind of an increased sustainability element to the audits, that farmers will have to do up a sustainability action plan listing out measures they can take on their farm to reduce emissions. So Board BEA has a number of technical advisory committees that's made up of industry stakeholders that kind of oversees the quality assurance schemes and any changes that are made to them. There's going to be a new one of these committees set up at some stage during the year, and the proposed changes will be put to this committee. It isn't clear now what groups exactly will sit on it, but Board BEA said that farmer representatives will sit on it, so we don't know exactly which groups, but it is likely that maybe one at least or some of the farm orgs will have a seat on it and have a say in the changes.
Yeah, it's definitely moved on a bit from last week anyway. And just sticking with yourself, Noel, on page 8 again, another very farmer focused story. We report that there will be a continuation for the bush burning allowance up until the 1st of March this year. That temporary allowance has been granted by the Department of the Environment. Look, it's one farmers won't want to be caught out on, Noel. What do they need to know?
So there's certain circumstances that farmers will be allowed to burn bushes, that will allow them to burn bushes this year. So they can do so up until the 1st of March 2023. Although local authorities and the Department of the Environment says that burning maybe shouldn't be the first option that farmers look at. They could look at piling bushes into a corner and just letting them rot down, or they could look at running the bushes and that kind of thing through a mulcher. So farmers will be allowed burn up until the 1st of March, and then the burning period will close, and it'll be opened again briefly from the 1st of September to the 30th of November at the end of the year. But it did say that this will be the last such exemption or derogation or whatever you want to call it to the burning rules around bushes. The Department of Agriculture does have a report that was done up by the Irish Bioenergy Association. It was tasked by the department with doing up a report to look at the alternatives to burning. And the exemption was granted while the department has time to look at the options that were explored in this report. The report itself found that a large majority of farmers didn't even know that the bush burning exemption was due to end on the 1st of January this year. So that's when the report would have been compiled. The burning of bushes was due to be completely ceased by the 1st of January. And in this report, there's a couple of options there, kind of around mulching, around looking to get the mulched material to see if it could be used for animal bedding or to get it into energy generation. It did, of course, say that bushes could just be left rot down. And I suppose on a point that farmers might find interesting is that it did say that flailing hedges is the best possible practice that farmers can undertake to reduce the amount of material that needs to be gathered up when hedges are being maintained. So it said regular flailing, it can add to biodiversity as the material, it isn't gathered up to be burned, or farmers don't need to compost it or anything, that it'll just rot down back into the hedge. So it's there's a lot there in the report, and it will be interesting to see what the department goes with and what points it'll look to push.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's one that causes kind of it's a sensitive point, I'd say, between farmers and the public. And we've lots of reading there on our website on hedge cutting measures and management, particularly from our tillage editor, Siobhan Walsh, just some brilliant pieces there on the Farmers Journal website. So any listener unsure about the kind of the rules and regulations around that, make sure to have a look there. But look, thanks, Noel, for joining. We'll move on to Rachel Donovan next. And Rachel, you've yet another dog attack reported on page 14 of this week's paper. It was a Kildare farmer this week with 19 sheep dead or found dead in his farm after dogs ravaged his flock. What are the details?
Yeah, so I spoke to James Mulligan. Barry was the farmer. He had sheep about 100 sheep in a field in Caddamstown in County Kildare, and I suppose there was 19 dogs attacked. 10 were killed, and 9 were sorry, 10 were killed and 19 were attacked in total there. And that was last Friday night. So he would have seen them the evening before, and he got a call then Saturday morning to say that there was, I suppose, carnage in the field. Do you know, it's one of a number of attacks, he told me, in the last while in this area. They seem to be an ongoing issue. And you know, he is just frustrated that, I suppose, there's nothing being done and there's nothing that farmers can do. They're a bit helpless when it comes to this issue. And you know, obviously, Barry, these attacks come with financial losses. However, James said, you know, it's not actually about the money. It's more of an animal welfare. It's the animal welfare aspect of it that's hard to take. And you know, he said it took him a good few days to come to terms with or, you know, to bring himself to go down to the field and collect the dead animals. And, you know, I suppose as well as that, the remaining sheep in the field, he said, you know, they're absolutely terrified. They're in a little circle, and they won't kind of move out of that area of the field. And, you know, he maintains they might never thrive afterwards.
Yeah, no, it's a major mental stress for the farmer as well, particularly, you know, with the stock left over, and you wonder, will they ever lamb or go on lamb, or will they abort, and that kind of thing. And I was talking to Kevin Comiskey, the IFA sheep chair, during the week there, and we were saying maybe it's this post-pandemic kind of glut of dogs that everyone went and got a pup during the lockdown, and maybe they were working from home and had the time for it, but now they're gone back to working in an office, and the dog is now 2 years old, 3 years old, and has been left at home, and they're rambling. What's been done, though, from the IFA's perspective? I think they have a campaign out there at the moment asking for more to be done on this.
Yeah, and I suppose there's the working group as well that has been set up, but I think ultimately, Barry, the message is, and you know what, I was speaking to Kevin as well, people just aren't aware of what their dogs can do, and ultimately they're not fully aware what their dogs are doing at all times of the day or the night. You know, they're not aware of their where they are at all times. So that's ultimately it. And owners need to be more vigilant, and that's always been the message. You just don't know. It might be a dog, a pet, that stays in the house, even, you know, that comes in and you think maybe of no harm, but when they get out, that they really can do damage. And you know, this farmer said that you know, there was more than one dog, he reckons. You know, there was serious damage done to his sheep. And to a neighbouring field, even just last month, a neighbour of his, she had the very same issue and the very same type of kill. You know, it seems to be that these dogs aren't hungry; they're just out to kill.
Yeah, they're getting into the habit of it as well. That family pet, I suppose, that can turn around and become that vicious. But look, you have another one on page 14 as well, Rachel. and it's one we've tracked for a while, the upset at the Irish Country Women's Association. Members were told this week that governance issues are not being brushed under the carpet. Is this the end of it now?
Yeah, sure. I suppose to start at the beginning, Barry, it all began when Patricia Madden, Carol Grogan and Joanne Dunphy-Allen were removed from the National Executive Board of the IFA, and that was last October. So I suppose they said that they were removed for raising governance issues within ICA. So I suppose this communication to members from the ICA said that, you know, that these issues were not being brushed under the carpet. Now, however, it said that the removal of the three women was a sensitive matter and it wouldn't be appropriate to make a statement. In the message, it did say, you know, that they were not obliged to give legal or to give reasons as to the women's removal. You know, company law gives the association the right to remove directors without provision of reasons, it said in the communication to its members. I suppose as well as that, it also said, you know, that the recent media coverage about the governance of the association had caused upset to many of its members. However, I suppose it did kind of take some of the blame, you could say, that it said that, you know, these issues are down to the fact that ICA has been operated for decades now through both an association, which is the ICA, and a limited company, which is the Country Women's Trust. So I suppose it admitted that this governance complicates things, and it has since decided to change its structure.
Yeah, no, a good update, as you said there, on page 14 on the latest with the ICA. Move on to our deputy news editor, Amy Ford. Next, folks, and Amy, staying on page 14, you write that a salmonella investigation is ongoing on 8 poultry farms across the country. I gather they're all broiler flocks and the birds will be culled, Amy, but it's still a fairly significant outbreak.
Yeah, that's right, Barry. So as you said, they are all broiler flocks. So for anyone that's not sure, that they're basically flocks that are going for meat production. They're not laying eggs or anything else. They're farmed for meat, for chicken that we see on the shop shelves. So the latest update is basically that there is no update at this minute in time. The investigation is still ongoing by the Department of Agriculture. They haven't said anything new on it since the news broke on Monday. So 8 poultry farms, different locations around the country, and it's Salmonella typhimurium. That's what's been found in the 8 flocks. All the flocks have been restricted. They're under department controls and all of the birds will be humanely culled and they will not enter the food chain. The Food Safety Authority of Ireland, they've said that to date there's no cases, no human cases of illness linked to the investigation on the farms, and it said that this on-farm incident has arisen following the food recall of Western brand undertaken last week. So this is essentially last week the FSAI issued that recall of some batches of Western brand raw chicken products that was due to the presence of the same type of salmonella bacteria. These products were originally sold as fresh but are past their use-by date, but the label states that they are suitable for home freezing. So consumers with any of these brands of chicken are advised not to eat the affected batches and in case they have them in their freezers. There's, I suppose, how often does this happen? An outbreak like this hasn't happened definitely in many years, and to the best of my knowledge, Barry, not for a long time. But there is a national salmonella control programme in poultry that operates on an ongoing basis, and that includes regular sampling by the department and farmers at multiple points during the life stages of poultry flocks. And this programme has operated very successfully over many years with a very low prevalence of any salmonella species in Irish broiler flocks. And I suppose the key thing here is that for anyone with those batches of chicken, that if they are in the freezer, to take a look and to get rid of them, essentially don't eat them because they do contain salmonella, and obviously at this minute in time none of the rest of these flocks are going into the food chain, so there's no risk to human health from this outbreak on these farms.
Yeah, you said there, I think that's the main takeaway. It's quite a significant outbreak, but there is no risk to human health at the moment, as they have been culled, or they are being culled, and it's not in the food chain. So no, thanks for that update, Amy. We'll move on to our news editor, Katrina Morrissey, next. Katrina Morrissey, our news editor, look, we'll bring you in on your piece on page 8 on the inaugural dialogue on women in agriculture. Look, we had Rachel talking about women in agriculture there just a few moments ago, but this is a much more positive story. It was held in Port Laois yesterday with a full attendance from the agricultural ministerial trio of McConlough, Hackett and Hayden. Former Ag Minister Mary Coughlin led proceedings. What were your main takeaways?
Yeah, a very interesting day, Barry. It's the first ever national dialogue on women in agriculture. As you say, chaired by Mary Coughlin, a former Minister for Agriculture herself, and the first female one of those. A couple of panel discussions and some interesting lineups for those. The German, former German Minister for Agriculture, Julia Klöckner, pointing out, I suppose, that women in Ireland and Germany have faced similar challenges and are still facing similar challenges. One of them being, I suppose, what she called outdated gender strategies and traditional inheritance policies. So it'll be no stranger to anybody in Ireland. You know, we're familiar with this, I suppose, need or want on the part of some farmers that they would prefer the land goes to a son, the eldest son. That was the traditional method of passing down farms. Also the traditional method of passing down farms in Germany. And she said that it wasn't that long ago in Germany that a farmer would get pitying looks if he'd only two daughters. And at that time, they felt that the best option would be to marry those off so that one of the sons-in-law would then take over the farm. So thankfully, that's on the way out in Germany, and thankfully it is on the way out in Ireland as well. But nonetheless, I suppose highlighting that it does still happen in some cases, and it is not that far away in the distant past. Couple of takeaways for me, and I'll be writing a feature on the whole conference for next week's paper, but a couple of themes that came out of both the panel discussions and the workshops in the afternoon. Education, a huge focus on education for women, for men as well in the industry, but I suppose access to education for farmers, for female farmers, they want very practical education. The point was made, and it was also made by the German minister as well, you know, that women do a huge amount of work on the farm, but they may not have the farming qualification. They may have gone and done an off-farm qualification. So they might be teachers or they might be nurses. But in actual fact, they're doing a very integral part of the farming business as well. So they're doing the bookkeeping, they might be doing the wages, you know, they're doing the administration, things like that. But they don't have the formality of the agricultural qualification. So there is a need and a demand there from women to have courses to suit them, you know, whether it's a, you know, something along the lines of the Green Cert, but also smaller, more practical courses. And they're also very keen to have women only courses, because that, they say, would, I suppose, make them feel less inhibited in showing what they don't know. And like, these women could be extremely proficient business people in their own right, but they may not know how to drive that particular piece of machinery, or they may not know how to work, say, agfood.ie or whatever. So they want to be able to learn in an environment where they won't be looked at, you know, kind of disparagingly for not knowing this part of the business. Practical support then is another issue raised, you know, things like that women couldn't, they shouldn't be penalised in terms of old age pension supports. You know, those kind of structural government policies need to be addressed so that women don't always draw the short straw. Professor Maura Farrell from University of Galway making the point that women should be asked what type of education they want and provide what they want. You know, she made the point there's absolutely no point in thinking, okay, women, they want training in social media. They might want something far more practical than that. One of the other takeaways for me was that there was a general strong approval for what Siobhan Talbot, the Glanbia CEO, called blunt instruments to force change. So like gender quotas. And nobody really in favour of gender quotas in isolation. So gender quota being, you know, that there is a rule that says such and such a committee should have, say, for example, 40% women. But they are very keen on having gender quotas to force that change, but it can't be at the expense of the women who get the places not meriting the job. So Siobhan Talbot said this is something that Glanbia and Tierlon are focusing a lot on in recent years. And she said there's absolutely no reason that women should get places if they are not on merit, but that blunt instrument of the gender quota saying this many spaces are available for women only is needed to force the change, to force what she called a step change, because she said it just won't happen organically, it won't happen fast enough organically. So So there was lots of interesting things throughout the day. Minister of Agriculture Charlie McConnellogue obviously set this up, and he was flanked by Minister Pippa Hackett and Minister Hayden as well. He has said that he's prepared to refuse male candidates for jobs on the 12 state boards that come under his remit. Some of those farmers will be very familiar with, Horse Racing Ireland, Chagas. He's in charge of 12 boards in total. Some of them are not meeting that 40% quota of female board members. And he has said that he is coming to the point where, unless the boards take serious steps to address that, that he'll basically refuse any male candidates that are put forward. So an interesting day, Barry. And as I say, we'll have more on it in next week's paper.
Yeah, no, it seems to have been chock-a-block with really forward thinking on where women in agriculture needs to go. You mentioned there, Katrina, Germany's former agriculture minister, Julia Klöckner, that you were speaking to that politician from Germany. And we hear a quick snippet from her now.
This conference brings women together with nearly the same experiences, and they spell it out and they underline what is happening in agriculture and what they need for a change. They need support, second point. They need support for healthcare, for their security, of course. Mm-hmm. They are working in farms, but they are not really visible.
Yeah.
And third point is, I think, the education. We have to offer special education, lifelong education, in agricultural courses only for women. This encouraged them, I think.
And you mentioned also, I suppose, the demands of a caring role that women take can also make them step back from technical roles.
Yes. Yes. There are necessities?
Necessity to care.
Yes.
Yeah. Responsibilities.
Yes, you know, the responsibilities. Yeah. In families, it's the task is there, and mostly there's no choice to, and we have to make it clear that men also be responsible, and we need the infrastructure for it to help women, to support them, not to do everything by themselves.
And I know you mentioned there as well, Katrina, I suppose the Glanbia PLC CEO Siobhan Talbot, and that brings it right back to, you mentioned there about the board appointments that Minister McConnellogue is going to ensure that there is adequate female representation on those boards, those 12 boards that he's responsible for. Will that be immediate, or is this something, you know, that's going to come in over the next year or so, or will he be seeking those female nominations straight away?
So it'll depend on the individual board and when, I suppose, spaces open up, because these boards have limited numbers. Some of the boards are quite big. I think the largest one of the 12 boards that he's over has 19 members. Some of them are quite small. One of them has just 3 members. The gender balance on that particular one is really, it's kind of pathetic when you look at it, but it seems to be current circumstances. It's a 3-person board and there's currently only 1 man on the board. So that's 100% male representation there. So to answer your question, Barry, the nominations, I suppose, would be put to the minister as vacancies arise. And then the minister has said that if needs be, if he feels the boards are not taking it seriously, not doing enough to change up the gender balance and bring it to that minimum 40% female representation, that he might then refuse male nominations.
Well, it's definitely needs to happen anyway. And look, we'll hear from that Glanbia PLC CEO, Siobhan Talbot, now.
I think it is a journey that we're all travelling. There's an awful lot happening organisationally. This is an area that we particularly focused on in recent times in Glanbia, and we're doing a huge amount to really embed it within the organisation. In the near term, we're focused on recruitment and retention.
Okay.
Because I think when you focus on some of those input factors, you will naturally get more female representation. We're also doing a lot in terms of flexible working with the support system. We're doing a lot of education to make sure there's not unconscious bias in the organisation, and we have a number of areas like resource groups where we have some really strong employee resource groups to encourage women in particular, multicultural, LGBTQ, really creating forums so that we can listen to the communities. What are the barriers? How do we actually get people to develop their careers? And it's good for everybody. It's great for the organisation and it's great for the people involved.
And Katrina, look, you said there as well, I suppose, you know, the kind of hidden work that women are doing on farms. I know in our own case here, my own mother, it is the paperwork. And while she does work off farm, the place will fall apart without her. You said as well that Minister McConlogue set this up and he was flanked by his ministerial colleagues. And again, looked at, you know, to really put some shape on it. They brought in former Minister Mary Coughlan to lead proceedings. What are the next steps for it, though? Was it a once off or is this going to kind of have legs and continue?
I think the event itself looks like it will be a once off in the sense that this was set up to start the conversation. It's, you know, very much part of the CAP policy now that there's a focus on women in agriculture. But following on from yesterday's event, there will be a report compiled. So all of the feedback from the workshops, and there was workshops on everything from sustainability to financial and legal issues for women in agriculture. All of that feedback, all of the, you know, the suggestions, all of the criticism will be fed into a report, which I gather the Department of Agriculture is going to turn around in about 2 months. So there will be, I'd imagine, a good look taken then at that report to see what policy changes can follow on from it.
No, it'll be good to see. And look, we've gone through the detail of the day there, though. But and I think it's worthwhile spending time on this topic. It is very important, and change does need to happen on it. But look, that's all we have time for this week, folks. And there's lots more reading in this week's paper, including news of phenomenal demand for beef bulls among dairy farmers, fertilizer prices, views from sheep farmers in crisis, and a case of BSE in a Dutch cow. More on those and all discussed by the team today in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. A special thanks to Jerome Dunn and Claire Nash from our team for editing this podcast. They do a great job as always. Thanks to you for joining and for listening. Safe calving and lambing, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.